Join Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Please join us in the pledge of allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on the agenda tonight is the approval of the regular session minutes of July 8th.
I had a question. Sharon, are you doing the minutes?
Yes, ma'am.
I just don't remember, but did Mr. Girardi only get permission for one table and two chairs?
At Schoolies, yes.
I thought it was two tables.
Two tables with two chairs. Yeah. Two chairs each.
Yeah, I just didn't remember that we just gave him permission for one table.
I will correct that.
Two chairs. Does anybody else have any corrections or additions to the minutes as proposed? I have a motion to approve the regular session minutes as amended.
Motion to approve.
Right, we have a motion to approve the regular session minutes of July 8th, 2013 as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, so the regular session motion passed unanimously. And then all councilmen are present. Next, we have the approval of the executive session minutes of July 8th.
Move to approve.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Lynch to approve the executive session minutes July 8th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the reasons for the closing of the meeting, state statute is that for this meeting was four different reasons. One was to discuss a personnel matter that affects one or more specific individuals, to protect the privacy or reputation of individuals with respect to a matter that is not related to public business, to consider the acquisition of real property for a public purpose, and lastly, to consult with staff, consultants, and other individuals about pending or potential litigation. I'd like to call Hunter Robin Tomasoli to come forward. And anybody want to bring him with you?
Bringing my peeps.
And I would explain why we've asked Robin and the Arts and Entertainment Committee to address us tonight. Back in the spring, I think it was about April, or early April, the Arts and Entertainment Committee, which is part of the Borough Main Street program, was basically reconstituted and totally reconstituted. It had been one of the original committees back before we even had a Borough Main Street designation, but some of the people who had been very active in it had gotten involved in other aspects of the community. So I can't even remember who was the first one that suggested it. But I certainly know Robin was one of the folks, and Heather and so forth, that said, you know, we need to be doing more. I couldn't agree more. So we basically put the word out that we were looking for volunteers. And there was an instant surge of interest and an instant surge of activity. And the committee has been very active. Already accomplished things and is doing, having an immediate impact. And I thought it'd be good if you had an opportunity to just tell the council and the community what it is that you all are doing as a revitalized Arts and Entertainment Committee under the Borough Main Street.
Sure. First of all, I co-chair the committee with Dee Gilbert, but tonight Heather Layton is here. She's a committee member. Brian Robertson, Mark Huey, and Austin Whittison. And Like the mayor said, back in 2005, when Berlin was designated an arts and entertainment district, there were some business owners, including Kate Patton and Karen Pringeman, along with Lisa Challenger from the county and Mary Boland from the town, made up the first Berlin Arts and Entertainment Committee. In 2008, when Main Street or Berlin became a Main Street district and the two committees kind of merged. But for the last several years, the Arts and Entertainment Committee has been somewhat inactive. And this past spring, at the urgency of Angela Reynolds and Anya Mulis, we actually reorganized, and we've been meeting weekly ever since with a simple mission in mind: to bring everything arts and entertainment to Berlin. And this includes expanding our funding sources, to organizing free family movies in town, to hopes of even building a skate park and a community saltwater pool. Our first order of business, though, was to refresh the arts and entertainment logo. And I'm going to have Brian, Austin, and Mark talk to you about that vision for the new logo. And they're going to discuss its application and our branding strategy. And our second immediate objective was to focus on enhancing Second Friday art strolls, particularly for this season, mainly to encourage town merchants to participate and remain open during Second Friday art strolls, to include artists on the streets, and to improve the quality and the quantity of arts and entertainment in Berlin. And Heather's going to discuss some of the new plans for art stroll and the inclusion of public works of art. So I'm going to turn it over to the guys behind me so that they can talk to you about the new logo and some of the things that we've already done to kind of rebrand Berlin Arts and Entertainment.
Okay. Basically, when we discussed reviving Art Stroll, we needed to rebrand. And in that, we also developed a brand for the Arts and Entertainment Committee. We've developed a logo. You've probably seen it on posters around town and all the businesses, as well as on stickers that are on participating art stroll businesses. The stencils on the streets, the spray chalk, it should be disappearing in a couple weeks, depending on the weather. We developed the logo. It's got the, for the Arts and Entertainment Committee, it's based on the anchor and the slogan, Anchored in the Arts. The top of the anchor resembles a light bulb, which is a symbol for creativity, and it also is a, subconsciously, a pitch for businesses to keep their lights on after dark, so the town looks like it's alive. It's got the crossed paintbrushes symbolizing art. Poster has the slogan "Stroll, Shop, and Dine" to include, you know, the restaurants and other businesses in town, which really weren't included before before we started this. I think that's pretty much the idea behind the branding. We went with kind of a retro theme with a contemporary push. This guy in the bowler hat is representing, you know, the there's a famous art piece, and what's the movie?
Thomas Crown Affair.
Thomas Crown Affair, if you've ever seen the movie with the guy walking around, a bunch of them carrying art pieces, and that was the idea behind it. You look at the stencils, the guy walking also is represented with footprints that are trying to guide people during art stroll to extend their way outside of the main street and into businesses such as Saltwater Media in the Midtown section. And I think the last art stroll, she said she had 75 or 80 people stop by her place. We've promoted heavily on Facebook, lots of social media. The group that we have is pretty special. I mean, with the expertise, we have a lot of designers, we have filmmakers, we have photographers, we have illustrators, and we're basically just here to help any business promote the arts.
I mean, one of the biggest things that I saw being new to the community, and for those who I haven't met before, I'm Austin. I opened up Refresh Media upstairs in the art gallery, because there's so many beautiful things happening, but they're all subdivided. And you have the chamber, and you have the main street, and you have, everyone is doing their own thing, but there's no, like, communal push, and really there's no profit agenda that we have other than bringing everyone together and finding a place that we all can promote for each other. So we've set up some pretty extensive rules for people who don't even understand how to use social media to be able to utilize this tool for themselves, where they can address us through the social network by sending a note to our message saying, you know, hey, we're doing this, we have an artist in our space, and then we can include them on a map that we're hoping to brand with not only just Second Fridays, but a way that when someone comes to Berlin, they have an active understanding that it's not just the Atlantic Hotel and the Globe, that there's places like Baked and Saltwater, and everyone is participating not only in just selling their goods, but they're also participating in pushing art. And we really encourage anyone that's going to be on that map that they have either an artist, you know, or an author, or some sort of musician, someone that kind of brings people outside of just the goods they sell. And I mean, Second Fridays, like Robin said, is our main objective right now because they are scheduled and they're on the books. But we've been thinking outside of the box for a lot of different things and trying to figure out a way that we can utilize the community, not just through events that exist now, but maybe coming up with some ones that would be beneficial. And a couple that she mentioned before I think would be super successful here in the community. A movie night. I mean, I do film work, and being able to get the licensing to put a, for a better sense of a word, drive-up movie theater on the outside of downtown where people can bring their beach chairs and sit around and maybe watch an appropriate movie for, you know, PG or below. And, you know, the idea of the skate park came about when we kind of did some work with the Dew Tour, and we realized that on an annual basis, this community is bringing the largest skate park in the history of the East Coast, and then it gets broken down and basically thrown away, and trying to find a home for those particular ramps, not just for developing a skate park, but more for an educational purpose and training kids in how to do those type of things, because 5 or 10 years from now, I think we're all going to be surprised that Ocean City is going to be known for something like that. And embracing that as a community here, we can really piggyback off a lot of the stuff that's going on there, whether it be bringing some of the local artists that are involved with that, or the skaters or the extreme sports people to come to this community, encouraging them to outreach outside of Ocean City and really embracing Berlin as a place of commerce as well.
There's like a misconception about what Archstroll does for certain businesses. There's some business owners that'll tell you that we didn't really make a lot of money during Archstrolls, and we've been trying to push to educate business owners that, you know, you may not see an immediate effect of Archstroll, you know, that night. You know, Friday nights may not be your biggest night, or that may not be your biggest draw, but having a community that's built on those sort of events is going to get the word out, and it's why people are eventually going to want to come to Berlin. And it's not, you know, you may not see the immediate effect, but long-term goals are beneficial.
And diversifying the age group. I mean, we have right now a very strong group of people that are already coming out based off the word of mouth. And the impact that we've seen over 2 or 3 months of just trying to social network, I mean, we're seeing increased numbers in different demographics, which I think is strong for everyone. I mean, every part of the community should be a part of this, from children to elderly. And, you know, I think there's a subsection of people that come during different times, but really just educating people that it's here.
Yes, yeah, that's a big component. It's just letting people know that it's going on. Because I've spoken to some people in town who live in Berlin, and they don't even know that there's something called Second Friday. So I think with our branding strategy, it's to raise awareness here, and then also if we create something that is recognizable and people continue to see it elsewhere, whether it be in like other newspapers beyond Worcester County even, like if we could get people from Salisbury to make a trip over here, then we've cultivated a local crowd and also a more regional crowd, and then you can help that drive. And it just works for Berlin as well. Like, I have this mentality that anytime, like, whenever the town wins, everybody wins. So if we can help encourage people to come to Berlin for this on the nights that there aren't activities or aren't huge events in town, then you've activated another weekend, and you've brought in another demographic, and you've encouraged more people that, like Brian said, they may not personally benefit from Second Friday Archstroll directly. However, you build this mentality about this town, you generate this buzz about this town, and then anytime people see Second Friday Art Stroll or see our branding, or will there be like a koozie that we put out with our anchor on it, it just gets driven into people's heads. Oh, Berlin, Maryland's coolest small town. They're anchored in the arts. And then it, you generate a buzz, and hopefully that could help not like pull people in off of 50 when they're going to or from Ocean City, because that's, you've got tons of traffic there, and if it's just a quick little drive, and if you build that name up for it, then the town can benefit as well.
On a bigger scale, I mean, I grew up here, and for some reason I felt that I needed to go away to go experience the world, and after experiencing the world, there isn't a better place I'd rather be than here. So if we can develop a community that is conducive for entrepreneurship and is truly anchored in the art, it's a catalyst for keeping our kids here and really building a stronger community right here. I think that all of us love where we are, and this is volunteer. None of us have any profit stake in this at all. It's just about trying to help everyone really embrace what Berlin's all about. And I mean, from a business perspective, we put together a commercial that's in its 75% done stages, where we've written a script that includes every single business name as part of telling the Berlin story, and we've done some really cool shots with most of the events that have gone on. And you know, it's something that we all can utilize as a marketing tool, not just business specific to one particular boutique. It kind of showcases everyone, but everyone can use it and embrace it as a personal marketing tool. So hopefully we'll stand here a year from now and you'll see some major impacts, but it really is a matter of getting you all involved and embracing it and understanding where we're coming from, so you guys can reach out to us and say, you know, how can you all help? And we can kind of give you the tools to be successful. If you're not Facebook savvy or you're not social networking savvy, we really want to make it so it's like a scratch and sniff sticker, that you come to us and we can kind of help you get involved, whatever skill set you have.
A big part of what we're doing happens to be merchant outreach. You know, they're perfect example. We had a business owner come to us recently and say that they don't have a Facebook and they're really not interested in using one. So they were a little bit concerned about how they would get their information to hit our page. But so we met with them, and even though they're not going to join Facebook and they have no interest in building a business Facebook page themselves, they're just going to email one of us their information, and we're going to make sure that that information hits. So, you know, I think our whole committee realizes that every business is different, and we might all be on different pages, but there is a way, we hope, to kind of reach everybody and create complete inclusion, and then work with those people specifically who are interested in learning social media and what it might afford their business, and to just know that there's somebody in town that they can look to get that kind of help.
Yes. Just abuse us while we're able to volunteer. Because, I mean, it really is kind of crazy how this all came together and what kind of marketing team we really have here, because we can literally do everything from print to commercials to social networking, and we're able to do it for free, and we want to do it for free to push the arts. And we even have someone on the committee that can decorate windows, because those are like a huge... That's a huge avenue to display art, and to be creative is the windows, the signage, the sidewalk signs. Eventually, we'd like to do maybe some creative hand-welded bike racks in town somewhere, some three-dimensional type sculpture where you can hook your bikes up to, and, you know, landscape, you know, sculpture spaces, gathering places, you know, somewhere in the future.
And Mark touched on something that I think is really strong, is the reason that we're Second Friday is there are a lot of other communities here in the Lower Shore that also have these events, whether it's First Friday in Snow Hill or Third Friday in Salisbury or Fourth Friday in Easton or wherever it is. We've outreached to them and we've communicated and said, look, it's not a competing scenario, but if we all promote to ourselves, and Heather spent some time with the Snow Hill and I went down and spent some time with the Salisbury, and I mean, they're in the similar situation that we are, trying to figure out a way to combine as a group. And after even sitting with their groups, I feel like we have a really strong, something special that may be kind of a leader in that group of promoting all of the art around the Eastern Shore, not just Berlin.
And I think Heather can speak to particularly this next upcoming Art Stroll. Art Stroll is just a little piece of what we intend to do, but because it was something that seemed like it was neglected for a little while. So you had some merchants that were open, lots of others that weren't. And I think it was kind of creating a really bad scenario because people were coming to Art Stroll, but because not everybody was open, they were unhappy about that. And I think those people then go back and tell other people that, you know, the Art Stroll here maybe is not so great. So our intention is to obviously completely change that, and we just felt like we had to jump on that ASAP, considering the fact that our, you know, biggest season was upon us. So Heather's going to talk about what we're doing for new for the upcoming Art Stroll in August.
Okay. Well, in addition to trying to get everyone open and hosting an artist, that's ideal. We would love to add 8 to 10 vendor spots through town to get people moving from shop to shop. Snow Hill, they have vendors on the street and people just glide through town and it works really well. And if we could add vendor spots like in front of the chamber, near the bathrooms, the coffee house offered a parking spot for a nonprofit. The Taylor Bank courtyard to get people down by Bruder Hill. The drive next to Town Center and the Williams Brother offer their driveway behind their TV shop on Pitt Street. Mike from Rain said an artist could set up behind Rain's, like that little back cubby area that he has. On the sidewalk by Shepherd Realty, Town Center on Main Street, and then all the way down by Cupcakes in Bloom. I think that will really, they'll be visible from all corners and it will get people moving. And then I also spoke with Ann Coates in Snow Hill about public art, and we're hoping to bring, one of the first on the list was made possibly either a large mural or mat painted on the Barrett Freeman building. Terry said that her father has offered that building before to be painted. I know she doesn't want to speak to him, but that's just something.
You can have it at the back.
The side of the building to the parking lot that faces Tex-Mex. So, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. And there's Anne's coming, I think, to speak to our group to give guidelines for public art. And there's grants and funding and guidelines.
I mean, I think the Peach Festival is the next horizon, right?
Yes.
And I mean, the one thing that we'd really like to see happen, and I'm working on figuring out funding to be able to purchase the equipment to accomplish this, but we'd like to do the first movie on Main Street that day, and we'd like to do James and the Giant Peach, which is a G-rated movie, encouraging families to come and bring their lawn chairs and set them up outside the Atlantic Hotel and on the sidewalks and really experience a family movie, and that would kind of pair with Art's Second Fridays, because Second Fridays ends around 8 o'clock. We would begin the movie. Everyone would shut down the stores and would give an opportunity for all us vendors who spend all this time working on getting the events to actually have something we all can embrace and enjoy together. There is a significant amount of money that goes involved with buying a projector, particularly a quality one that would last long enough so that we can do this multiple times. So we've come up with a couple funding solutions, possibly doing crowdsourcing and Kickstarter campaign and maybe having the community donate money towards what we're trying to accomplish. I'm also looking personally to financing it. It's something that I'd like to have for, I could possibly utilize for my business maybe more so than anyone else. But if we could, that's something we'd love to get some approval on so that should the funding come through over the next couple of weeks, we could put the first movie out in the Main Street.
It wouldn't require any street closures. It would basically be projected on his side of the building where Refresh Media is. And we've already talked to, Pat from the hotel is contacting John to ask for permission to allow people to actually set up chairs along the sidewalk there and in that courtyard area.
Talk to the owner of the building.
Yeah, it's Gail Lewis, and I have spoken to her, yes. The only thing she wants is nothing permanent, so we suggested either getting an old canvas sail and or some sort of white canvas material that we can fabricate and break down whenever we choose to use it or not. Like I said, the only real X factor is affording the equipment to do so. And if we can't accomplish it by this next Second Friday, which I'm going to do everything in my power to be able to do, it's definitely something on the horizon we'd like you guys to start thinking about.
And again, here's my question. Many good things happening. Are you asking for us something from us at this point?
I mean, just as if you guys had objections to it, I'd love to hear ways that we can improve that idea, or if there's a better space that you guys had or a better way to do it. I think just putting the idea out there, I feel like there's a lot of talk about what's going on and there's not a lot of cohesiveness, and this is kind of our opportunity to share some of the ideas that may be outside of the box thinking now, but maybe a couple weeks from now or a couple months, this is something we're embracing and actually incorporating in what we're doing.
Well, I think it's really nice that you guys have gotten back together and rebranded the Friday Night Art Stroll and reaching out to the other merchants, because I know I've been on a few committees with Michael, and you know, you kind of got all these little individual committees on Main Street, all with the same common goal, but it's like they're all running away from each other, and you need to, you know, work together. And the idea about, you know, keeping the lights on in the stores at night, that doesn't sound, you know, that unreasonable, yet, you know, it really helps if the town is lit up for Friday Night Art Stroll. And the idea with the movies is an awesome idea on the side of that building. And, you know, it's just nice to see you all working together again for Main Street, because we've got to keep it going, and it's a constant thing. You know, you can't stop.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think definitely the idea of having something, some special attractions that may vary from art stroll to art stroll is a very shrewd way to go, because, you know, there are some elements that you may want to have for every art stroll, and other times I assume you may have like a particular theme or a different aspect of the arts that you want to promote for that particular art stroll. And the movie thing, I know it was discussed a long, long time ago, and there was like a thousand other things that had to be done, like sidewalks, lights, kinds of things. So I think the timing is good. Rather than pull it off in time for the Peach Festival, it's hard to say, but I think it's something that definitely would be another attraction that would fit in nicely with the kinds of events that we're doing, and again, it has appealed to people of all ages. The one thing all of our events have in common is that they're weather dependent. So, you know, that's why you want to stay on the good side of Mother Nature and everybody else. I really think that has a lot of potential. And obviously, if there's some way we can, you know, help coordinate that and so forth. The time, I do know this, generally speaking, the amount of time and preparation that you have to get something off the ground, it tends to be reflected in the success of the event. And a recent example was the bridal weekend that I think that group met almost weekly last spring to have something ready by, what was it, late June. And it took a lot of work. And it came off very nicely, and then they built on it again in the fall. I think it's now going to become a permanent, at least once a year, maybe even more. But that's my only caution, is that Peach Festival would be great, but I would encourage you to make sure the first time you did it that it went well, rather than have an artificial deadline that may, you don't want to make one of your first, I call it, but you don't want to make one of your first very, very, very visible efforts too much on the run, because everything you're saying here, I think, is extremely encouraging. I think it's right on the mark. It's tying together a lot of pieces, and I think I've told some of you before that I think that although many, many things have been accomplished over the years in having Berlin reach its potential, I think despite all that's been done, arts and entertainment has some of the greatest potentials still to be accomplished. And that doesn't mean it hasn't been good, it just means there's just a lot of opportunity. So my caution to you is concentrate on making sure each thing you do as best you can do under the time constraints and financial constraints you had at the time, so that people say, wow, they do something, they really do it well. But, you know, obviously I'm not encouraging you to not do things, but just, you know, you've got a lot of good stuff going here. And that's my only caution is, I know just from our own experience, for some of our first events, we've actually downplayed them a little bit because it was kind of like a dress rehearsal, to use an artistic analogy. All right, here I would say the same thing. I think all of these ideas sound great. And if I understand correctly, did I interpret correctly that for second Fridays, that for a number of them, that you would almost have like a theme at different times, or was that fair?
I don't think we're going to do themes.
As a matter of fact,
certainly not every art school.
You guys already have a lot of branded themes. And I mean, us just playing off the Peach Festival. In fact, it's the week following the Peach Festival that you give an award that weekend on that Friday night. So we thought that pairing a movie that was themed with the Peach Festival.
There may be some marketing situations we can take advantage of seasonally and stuff like that. But yeah. I mean, it's not
the cool part about it is we're developing a list of artists that are in the Lower Eastern Shore that are coming through here, and with the ability to control who are in our stores and who are in these vendor particular spaces that we're asking for, we can keep every second Friday fresh so that we're not seeing the same artists in the same street and the people are like, well, I did that last one,
right.
I'll hold off. But
deja vu all over.
Yeah, no, in fact, there's reasons to come because there's new and better things happening.
Well, is it also my impression that in the few places, because I think we've already been discussing this in general, in the few places where we have conflicts, we try to resolve those conflicts. So by just the next year's schedule,
the consensus is...
I think there's only a couple so far.
Yeah, but the consensus from our committee is that after talking to a lot of different merchants in town, and a perfect example of this is during art strolls where they're partnered with an event, Baked Dessert Cafe does great. They're some of our biggest nights. Bungalow Love does not share that same scenario. So in addition to, or in light of, you know, being inclusive and trying to understand everybody's situation, the committee really has decided, you know, by consensus that it would probably be best to leave art stroll. And having said that, to move events off of art stroll nights.
Yeah, to a different Friday. That's
exactly.
I mean, if it's a successful Friday night event,
right.
A couple weeks difference one way or the other is not going to make or break it.
That would make, you know, two Fridays right. in a row that would be great nights in Berlin. So we see that as being a win-win for everybody.
That's exactly what happened with the bathtub races, because as soon as they got canceled because of the rain, we immediately jumped on marketing and we took our logo and we added umbrellas and we pushed that, you know, art stroll still going on. And that was still a really good night, that Friday night. And then the next week we had the bathtub races and that was a really good night too.
How many people did we reach on Facebook when that went out, guys?
Well, in the initial map that we sent out and spread through social media, mostly via Facebook, we didn't get it out to all the like print outlets in advance with a press release, but we were just going with Facebook for the first one. We hit over, I think it was 10,000 people viewed that, and I believe it was shared over 60 or 70 times. So that's like 60 or 70 people like threw that in front of their friends and family, and if we that was the first time. If we create this recognizable image that it goes out and they see the color, they see the lime green, they see the font, the logo, they know that Second Friday is going on. And then people that don't know say, what's that? I see this everywhere. What's that? Like, why is this logo on the sidewalk? What's that mean? And anytime you have people asking yourselves, what is this? And they get the answer by whether it's a poster hanging up or it's a merchant or it's just somebody who's involved with the town, then they've got the answer and it's Berlin. And then you just like keep hitting that, and anything you put out then is branded with the same strategy, and then they just receive it the same way and it just builds. So it's like to be able to do something on the weekends, like in, or on the second Friday art strolls, independent of the events, we could almost turn into our own events. So you have like, we could do like a recital or kind of like the Shakespeare Brown Box Theater to put on. It was great, but at the same time, like just orchestrating that so you don't have like a 3-hour or a 2-hour production in the middle of 5 to 8 whenever most of the stores are open, and just orchestrating that a little bit better to benefit the merchants and the town and everybody else as best we can would be our goal, I think, down the road.
Thank you. And again, it looks like a lot of this is getting marketed and first creating the market by you know, like say the well-known artists and different highlighting different kinds of arts throughout the year. But I think it's exactly what we've been hoping for, and I think like everything else, we want to play a supportive role, but we also want it to be like all the other things we've been having down, driven by the people who are interested, regardless if they're volunteers or business people or whatever. Does anybody have any questions for these folks?
Sounds great. I mean, you guys have access to us as well. I encourage you to reach out for, if it's as simple as a design question or a potential event that any of our skill sets would benefit, we're here to help.
Great. That's great.
We generally meet on Tuesdays at 5:30 upstairs at Refresh Media, so Okay. Anytime.
Really
you all are welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And great success already. That's great.
Thank you.
Next is a motion to approve a tax abatement. It's an annual request that's made from the Berlin Community Housing and also the Berlin Community Improvement Association. Who's going to take the lead? Mary, you going to take the lead on this?
I certainly can. As you have seen in the past years, the Berlin Community Housing Corporation and BCIA, Berlin Community Improvement Association, have put forth requests for abatements of their 2013 town property taxes. And I believe you'll find in your packet copies of both entities' bills and showing those portions of our town tax.
I think we've done this a number of years, except for 1 year when they were going to change the legal who the board of directors and the actual legal entities and people that were going to represent them. Once that was settled, and we went back to the legal agent. Does anybody have any objection or any suggestions or comments related to this, what is actually an annual request?
Do they do the same thing for the county? Do they request county abatements?
I do not know.
Yes.
Yeah, it shows here the state contributes a little to it. Just your motion needs to have Tony's name taken off of it.
More for approval being correct, that's fine. Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Burrell to approve both tax abatements, and just to for the record, the one is for the Berlin Community Housing Corporation. It's for the Head Start building, and that tax abatement from the town of Berlin is $1,516.40. And the other is for the Berlin Community Improvement Association, and that's for the multi-purpose building. And that abatement totaled $1,232.84. So we have a motion by Councilman Burrell to approve both abatements. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is a motion to approve purchase of engineered wood fodder from West Recreation for Henry and Student Cater Parks. Mary, can you tell us a little bit how this would be?
Actually, I think Mike could probably answer that better. This is, it's an annual purchase for the safety surfacing for the playground equipment in both parks. It's engineered wood fiber. I said Mike could do it. Here I am. Engineered wood fiber, meaning that it's very similar to mulch, however, it's cut into very uniform sizes. So you have less chance of splinters and hard pieces and that kind of thing.
I'll make a motion to approve. It was something we do every fall, right?
Yeah.
Make a motion to approve the purchase order for the wood mulch. Which company? Zager?
West Recreation, which has a lower price.
West,
yes. It's West Recreation is a deal for Game Time.
Right, when you're a person.
Yes.
For $2,095.
It's the amount of $2,095. Okay, we have a motion to approve the purchase of the engineered wood fiber for Henry Parks at Stephen Care Park in the playground areas for the amount of $2,095. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes unanimously. Next is we're going to have a public hearing on the ordinance 2013-5, and this is the public hearing that deals primarily with a very minor change in the zoning section of town code as it relates to sidewalk signs. Is that fair?
That's a fair assessment.
Okay, all right. Now I'll open the public hearing on ordinance 2013-5. Does anyone here from the state wish to address the council on this ordinance? Does anyone here from the county wish to address the council on this ordinance? Does anyone who's in attendance tonight wish to address the mayor and council on this proposed ordinance? Hearing no comments, the hearing is now prepared to close. We basically, we'll just write down, it's very simply that the sidewalk signs, the meat of this, its real impact is the fact that people, businesses within the town of Berlin apply for a sidewalk or sign, which some people call sandwich sign. When they apply for the permit, they apply directly to the director of planning, and that there are four criteria that they must be met. Three of the criteria are, all four criteria are very similar to what currently exist. First, the size is exactly the same. Maximum allowable size shall not exceed 2 feet in width and 3 feet in height. The second requirement is that there shall be no more than one sign permitted for business. The third criteria is that the sign shall not expand more than 2 feet at the base. And the fourth criteria is that the sign is constructed of a wood base. What this does, it's simple, it makes it very clear and straightforward as to what is required. If these requirements are met, then the planning director is to issue the permit. And if they don't meet the requirements, they don't meet the requirements. It's pretty straightforward. So it doesn't not a lot of issues to have to be dealt with here. But it gives a total freedom and discretion to each owner of the sign as to how best to be used in the limited space that's available. So, now, do we have the option now of passing this?
Yes.
I think this has been discussed quite a bit in previous meetings. Does anyone wish to make a motion to approve ordinance 2013-5?
I make a motion to approve ordinance 2013-5.
Okay. A motion by Councilmember Brittingham to adopt the ordinance that sets regulations and requirements for sidewalk sign permits in the town of Berlin. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is I'm sure that many of you saw in the papers a couple weeks ago, I guess it's been now, where the county is, as required by law, by state law, is redistricting the voting districts in Worcester County to conform with the consensus of 2010. When the redistricting is established by the county, that will be the voting districts for the next 10 years. And then 10 years from now, I'm sure that based on whatever growth and changes in population in Worcester County, that a new redistricting plan will come up. The reason this is on the agenda tonight is that the net effect of redistricting that has been proposed by the county is that Berlin would be divided into three different voting districts, whereas it currently is divided into two districts. Currently, we are divided between District 2, which is called the Central District, commonly referred to as the Minority-Majority District, and is currently represented by Commissioner James Brunell. The other district that we currently represent under the current voting districts is number 3, which is the Senate-Pupsen District, which is currently represented by Commissioner Bud Church. Under the redistricting plan is currently proposed by the county, third district, the town will be divided into a third district, which is number 4, commonly called the Western District, and is currently represented by Commissioner Berger Schachter. The town has been divided at least into two different commissioner districts since the creation of the Minority-Majority District back in 1995. And since that time, Commissioner Purnell, who lives just immediately beyond the town boundary of Berlin, has been the commissioner representing that district. So there are positives and negatives, depending on how you look at this. Some folks perceive this as a negative because the percentage of voters from Berlin voting for any either particular commissioner would be diminished from the current level. It would have the least impact on District 2, the minority-majority district. It is being changed the least, so there's, at least from a Berlin perspective, there's almost no impact to the percentage of voters who live in the town of Berlin who would continue to vote for in the central district. The balance of the voters living in Berlin currently for the past 10 years voted in the Senate-Pupsen district. What this voting plan would do is basically take Senate-Pupsen would remain everything that's not in the central district from basically, this is oversimplifying a little bit, but to make it understandable, east all the parts of the corporate limits of the town of Berlin, east of US 113 would be in the central district. There would also be there's a little piece that includes Branch Street that also would be in the central district. Everything from US 113 west to Main Street, basically, would then remain in Senate-Pupsen District as it currently is. Everything that is immediately west of Main Street would then become a part of the Western District. So the negative is there are fewer, at least in two districts, there's no change in the Central District, but in districts 3 and 4, there will be fewer voters from the town of Berlin voting for those two commissioners because the votes split. But the advantage on the other side of the coin is that although there'll be a slightly smaller percentage, three commissioners representing Worcester County would need to get votes from Berlin. I'm sure it's possible, but I don't think it's probable that someone would be likely to win and not campaign or not receive any votes at all from either the Senate-Pupsen District or the Western District. The biggest impact I see so far is that's a judgment call, and that's why what the council would call rather than you see that as a wash. But what is very much impacted is that these districts determine where voters go for the big elections that we have for everything from county commissioner all the way up to our governor, Congress, House of Delegates, our state senator, the so-called state election that's held every 4 years. This is these voting districts determine which voting precinct you are assigned to. So people who are, at least as it is currently proposed, people who are in the central district will continue to go to the poll at the Stephen Decatur Middle School. People in the Sinopuxton district will continue to go to the Berlin Intermediate School. And in both cases, they use the cafeteria there. But there would be no polling place available in the town of Berlin for any voters assigned to the Western district. And to me, I see that as a significant disadvantage. I think the closest polling place that currently exists is the Shaw Fire Hall. And no offense to the Shaw Fire Hall, but we're going to have a lot more voters in Berlin than that immediate area. So one of the other consequences of the redistricting as proposed is that Stockton, which is currently in the Western District, is removed from that district altogether. But it has a polling place. So I do not see, from my viewpoint, why a bold voting place would need to be maintained in Stockton when there's one literally down the road in Stone Hill, which would obviously serve the people in Stone Hill and Western District. People in Pocomoke who are in that district. So I personally, if we were to, the reason we need to make this decision is that there's a public hearing, three public hearings. But the one dealing with Northern Worcester County is on Thursday, August 1st at 7 p.m. at the Stephen Decatur Middle School. And I think that it's our obligation as a mayor and council to take a position on the proposed redistricting. And personally, if you accept the redistricting as planned, I think that I would recommend it be based on contingent or support be contingent on establishing a polling place within the town of Berlin's Western District. And that's about the best I know how to summarize this.
That's a pretty good job.
has anybody got, a little over a week ago. Has anybody got any comments, thoughts, suggestions?
My comments based on what you said. I think it's right on target to you.
How many people are we talking about where you're looking to create a new polling place?
Well, it would be
for the county commissioners.
For the county commissioners? They didn't give us a number. But let's see, I guess it would be roughly a third of the population because I'm saying territorial wise it's about a third of the town. We're split pretty even thirds. So what do you have an idea how many people vote in the central district? Is that what gives us these? Yeah, the central district.
No, I know population numbers would not register voters. Yeah. That's a different. Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, if you choose early voting, you don't have to worry about it anyway.
That's true. Well, assuming that they're early voting somewhere in the neighborhood.
Right. Well, theoretically, it's been a gold brief.
It has been, and I don't know.
For the county.
If nothing changes in Newark, Jay?
I don't think Newark was impacted based on all those maps that got went to the website. All this in Newark. Let's see what you're looking for. Looking, comparing the current map with the new one, which let's see.
I'm just saying, it's really crazy how they do that stuff. My mother lives in Newark. They vote in Newark, but she has to drive to Snow Hill to vote. So she can't go right down the street and vote. She's got to drive to Snow Hill because it's the way the districts are split.
In fact, maybe that's something, if it was of convenience because of the highway,
Well, I have to drive.
Yeah, but I'm saying that it would be an option if they had in the Western District, which Newark was a part of, if they had a polling place in Berlin, then maybe some of those people could come up here instead.
Yeah, it's kind of silly to drive all the way to Snow Hill when you're polling right down the street.
But does any, I mean, and I have to say, from a political standpoint, you can make a pretty good argument both ways. Quite frankly, it's going to be that way for 10 years, and then it's going to be probably have to be changed again because at least it's my personal belief that the same areas that grew substantially in the last 10 years are going to be the same areas that grow substantially in this next decade. And that, by that I mean West Ocean City, Ocean Pines, Berlin. That's where almost over 80% of the growth of the county is. And I don't see Berlin not growing. If anything, I see it's being at the front edge of that growth. So, just trying to be as practical and fair. And I just think that it would be very inappropriate to expect a third of this town to have to drive out of town polling places if they want us to be part of the Western District.
Mr. Mayor, did you have an opportunity to talk to the Board of Elections at all about Berlin Far Hall?
About who?
About the Berlin Far Hall.
Yeah, they provide me the information. What has to be done is that we would have to ask them, who made that. That triangle that starts at the top of the railroad track in Main Street, comes down to Baker Street and goes back to Harrison Avenue, that triangle, which has less than six homes, I think.
Right. Well, they had their advised before it wasn't a viable candidate because the meeting room is on the second floor, because the elevator was not operational.
But here's the thing. They have other fire halls that could be operating on the ground.
They have all the meeting rooms there. That's where they had everything. So, again, is Buckingham Elementary viable? Is it actually in the district?
Yes. God, let me see.
Because, again, the contention was that Berlin Far Company is not a viable candidate because the meeting room is on the second floor. That was the contention previously.
The meeting room is downstairs.
You're talking about the small meeting room.
It's not big enough. Really? We'd have to use the hall upstairs.
Because, again, they were trying to use the actual locations in town for early voting, and they eliminated it because of that situation. So I would have a different place just in case they come back with that intention that Berlin Far Hall is not a viable space. But that, again, that meeting room downstairs is very small.
So you're looking for a second possibility.
Okay. I would just suggest that myself.
Sure. I tell you, I had to use a magnifying glass even when I blew everything up to the maximum size of the computer. And then I had to use the little part of the magnifying glass that was there because it is, I can't believe that the insets weren't made of this size. The insets are just
and this is useless.
The things they want is generation, so actually if they have a generator in case power does go off for an extended period of time, they won't have to go ahead and shut down the whole polling place. So again, those are the things you look at, and I believe that Buckingham is a good choice. Rich Preparatory is large enough if it's on a day that school, so those are the type of things that you want to go ahead and look at.
I'm sure if you tell a poll of our students, they'd be happy to close school right
now.
and I think the county schools are required by law now.
Right.
They are. Yeah, they are. Because they weren't. Worcester County was the only county not closing its schools for a long, long time. Decades.
Right about the upstairs. That wouldn't be conducive because you wouldn't be able to flow people through quick enough for that small elevator.
But again, if they just thought the small meeting room is big enough.
It's just because they got an elevator that they don't like.
Well, in any case, I do think you're right to have a seatbelt. And here's the other thing. In my opinion, again, is that if we've got a very viable polling place that's literally a few hundred feet in the Senate Hudson District, then I think that they should at least move this arbitrary line to include a viable voting place.
And right now, Buckingham is in the district?
If you can tell from this, what I'll do is I'll call back to the Board of Elections. I'll tell you the truth. I'll probably have to end up talking, I think it was Mr. Tudor that was head of the committee. Ed Tudor. I'll have to ask him if he can send me something that's, and ask him outright if he knows. And then if he can send something that shows the Berlin inset and a size that I think most people can read.
So what are you asking us?
Yes,
in discussing this with someone on the Board of Elections, one possibility you might entertain is they may be able to have voting for two districts in one location. So if you have a viable place that's a few blocks from the Western District, even though it's in the Senate Hudson District, they may be able to set aside a portion of that voting place for the Western District.
I can't imagine. I was trying to think. And so I was throwing this out theoretically. If the Berlin Intermediate School, which has been used for many, many, many years as a voting, the cafetorium, or as I use it, as a two quality purposes, is where the current voting district is. But literally, right across the hall or down the hall is the gymnasium,
which is previously. Which has been used
previously. So, that would be, if that's an option, that might simplify life for everybody.
Yeah, they're going to have the same problem down in Pocono in the central district.
But to the best of your knowledge.
I don't know. This is something they're considering. I don't know what could be done.
Here's what I've heard, and I don't know. Because we're discussing it, I don't claim to be an expert. I know it's paying a lot of attention to this stuff. Always have, right? My best understanding is that the state of Maryland frowns upon having two different voting districts in the same place, but I don't think it's outright illegal. Yeah. So if the Worcester County Commissioners wishes to work with us, I think we can overcome that problem. Because I don't think the state of Maryland gives a damn that much about that particular issue in this town. They got a lot of other things to worry about, especially when we have an established voting place that these people have been going through for over a generation.
Okay.
Is what I've outlined then what you wish to have expressed at the public hearing? I'll carry the word on that because that's part of what I'm supposed to do.
I agree.
And invite everybody to attend, I just want to make sure that we're in agreement before.
I agree with what you've presented, it needs to be addressed.
And what I'll do is I'll do a little research on both things about what we've got to do. The question about the fire hall, if that qualifies, we've got a question about whether the Buckingham BDS, Buckingham Elementary School, is in the district. And the third question is, can we use BIS for two voting districts? Okay.
That makes sense.
David, all I'm saying is be prepared to do some research if we need it once I make a couple of them.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And that's something hopefully we're going to discuss again for a long time. Yes, ma'am.
One more thing that you could mention.
Yes.
I was told by the Board of Elections that if we do need additional polling places, we need to ask for that money from the commissioners
in
these hearings.
Oh, yeah, don't worry.
They're worried.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, we don't want to forget about that. It's always important.
They're worried
about that. But really, I think that, if we're trying to accommodate the big picture, then I think they need, and I think they would. I would be very shocked if they didn't take that into consideration. But I, it's like the thing, I don't want to take it for granted that somebody saw about it either.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Next is our departmental reports. First, the Finance Director, Natalie Saleh.
Good evening, Mayor Council. I don't have anything to report tonight.
Next is Public Works Director Mike Gibbons.
Thank you. The herbicide treatments were completed last Wednesday on all town streets. We'll be going back this week, just checking all the streets to make sure we didn't miss anything. Jefferson Street overlay project was started last Monday and it was completed on Friday. I have pictures for the next meeting. I don't have anything today. Michelle's great.
It's really nice.
Yeah. And then lastly, the Broad Street sidewalk project is anticipated to be completed this Wednesday or Thursday.
Really? This week? That's great. Excellent.
That looks good.
I got a question on Fly Street. When a new sidewalk was installed, the distance between the new sidewalk and the
pavement.
Yeah.
You have in your package tonight a PO that will address that. As a Terra Firma gave us the price to mill that area and then overlay that, so that would take care of that gap. And then there's also a PO in there for striking for that street.
Okay, good.
It's near the budget.
That's it.
From the end.
That's it.
Great, thank you, Father. That's great news on the street side.
And drainage on that sidewalk worked great that flood we got last week. It really worked great.
Good.
Four leaves down.
Good. That worked.
Worked great.
And the grass or the weeds, whatever it is, you can tell you can treat them because they start dying the next day.
Yeah.
Well, that cheese works good in the heat, doesn't it, Mike?
That looks better than you.
Absolutely.
Like you.
Next, the Water Resources Director, Jane Clare.
Good evening. Finally, our three large projects are down to punch list items of 818 North. There are some major punch list items that need to be addressed. But we're, at least we're moving forward. The spray site, again, we're down to punch list items. Hopefully we'll take possession and substantial completion within the next month, month and a half. And then also Grand Street Well Houses, days.
In a matter of days.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's great news.
Awesome.
That's great news.
What did we decide on Maple Avenue?
Maple Avenue, that is going to be, we have decided that because Maple Avenue is going to have sidewalks put on, that we're going to include that as a line item on the RFP to get that part reconstructed because the sewer underneath seems fine. It just doesn't look like it had the compaction that is needed during the time.
Talk about the road surface itself?
Yes, yeah. Mike and I discussed that, and we're going to have that as far as part of that bid document.
I keep having visions of sinkholes.
Yeah, I mean, once it's excavated too, we'll be able to see more more concrete. But as far as the pipe underneath, there doesn't seem to be any type of issue, malfunction, any kind of.
So what you're saying is, as some other streets, where once the sidewalk and curb and all that's been put in, then you would go back and put in asphalt?
Right. They always have to go in and do the additional on that, and we had decided to also include that line item to review that.
So they'll basically have a nice brand new street.
Excellent. Thanks, Jay.
Great. Oh. Thank you. Thank you both. And next is Electric Utility Director Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have a few things to report on. The downtown streetlights, the painting of the lights, the summer help has finished painting all the poles black, and they're going to start putting the verde green on them this Wednesday, starting Wednesday morning. The next thing was, over the past 2 weeks, we've replaced 38 of the electric meters in the downtown area. Which are the new AMI meters. We now have a total of 94 electric meters installed in the downtown area, which today at work, I printed a actual read of each meter within about 5 seconds. I was able to go into reports and just hit report, and they printed out all 94 of them. And they did the actual read for each one of them within seconds.
So is the goal still to put the total 100?
The total was 100. We're going to install about 3 more. We wanted to keep maybe 2 or 3 for extras in case one was to fail for some reason.
Okay.
Tomorrow we're going to start installing the water meters, the touch reads on them. They had a little communication problem, which NextGrid has basically figured out how to fix that. So tomorrow we're going to install the 40 touch reads. NextGrid also wants to come in the first week or second week of August to have a training session with all employees involved from the billing side to the installation of the equipment. I just need to get with everyone to find out when the best time is for the schedule.
Is that within the next few weeks?
The first week in August or the second week or something like that.
Whatever works best for everyone.
Right. I wanted to get with Jane and Natalie and find out if anybody's available.
Okay.
Then the next thing was, the big thing was the operation of the generators. Since June 24th, we've operated 7 times, twice in June, 5 times in July. 5 times that we operated in July were all last week, Monday through Friday, during the hot spell. The DPL peak occurred on Friday, which was July 19th, and it was 3,945 megawatts. And the regional for the entire area occurred on Thursday, 7/18, which was 158,402 megawatts.
And we hit both peaks.
And we hit all the peaks. So right now we don't have to run unless it gets really hot again.
We've hit at least the 5 top peaks to date.
Correct.
Right? But if it gets hotter,
like for example, the highest peak was in 2011, which was 158,704. And we came real close to that Thursday at 158,402. So we missed it by about 300. I had to order fuel for the generators. We had 8,000 gallons that we purchased, that you'll see in the PO in there, and then I had to place another order today because when we ran Thursday and Friday, tank 3, we emptied that tank. So altogether in that runtime, we expensed about 16,000 gallons of fuel. Thank you.
It's certainly worth it if we hit all 5 of those peaks.
Yes.
We're still really vulnerable through about the first or second week of September historically.
Historically, yes, but we make it through all this.
Probably won't worry about generation for a while.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, I got a question. When you said you printed that report. From the meters?
Yes, sir.
Where's that data maintained?
It's in a database that NextGrid has on their server in LocalScrid, Virginia. I had a copy of it if you'd like to look at it.
I'm going to look at it after the meeting. Okay.
Thank you. Next is Police Chief Arnold Downey.
Good evening, everyone. Tomorrow, over half the department will be actually going to Salisbury for mandate in service training. And then we'll be going over recognizing and dealing with autism, sexual assaults, identity theft, and victim assistance. A couple of them actually will come back and be trained trainer, or the rest will be going at a later date. Every 3 years, delegates go ahead and come back and say these things have to be mandated trained, and we're taking care of that this week. PFC Collins is actually going to College Park tomorrow. She is actually going to be certified. She is certified, but she's going to be able to go ahead and certify to train all of us. First responder, CPR, and AEDs. We've already put it out to the town. As soon as she's
completed tomorrow. We'll be able to set up with Jack with all the individuals, and apparently there's quite a few in town that actually need to have in-service with CPR and with AEDs.
So she would be providing that training?
She will be able to, again, without charge, and we'll be able to do it here. One thing we'll be able to do is put it out of town first, and then any other surrounding entities or towns and municipalities, we'll be able to bring them in also.
She's already got the certification, but she's got to go to get that request out there.
She's actually going to be considered now an instructor. We'll be able to go ahead and fan out, and really she's being instructed for us. And that means she's going to be able to go ahead and train all of us as first responders and those sort of things, and we won't have to go to the academy, other locations to pay for that. With that, her certification will be able to cover everybody in the town also.
Please pass on our congratulations and appreciation to her.
Definitely will. And we'd definitely like to take the opportunity to thank the mayor and definitely for his concern of the officers that were involved in the accident on Friday. He definitely there, sent out a letter from himself and the council, and it definitely meant a lot to the guys themselves that were involved. We're still investigating those things and moving forward. Right now, our belief is that two of the vehicles were totaled during that incident. We've actually had a conversation with Barrett Chevrolet already. They have an idea of the cost for that same vehicle, and we're actually looking at state bids. So we're in that process, and right now we want to go ahead and ask you if we can go ahead and do an open PO, not exceed $19,000, to replace one of those vehicles, and that is actual a detective's vehicle, so we won't have any time lost. Again, as soon as he's ready, we want him to be able to go ahead and keep on doing the assignments that he's been doing, you know, without any kind of breaks.
And I do have a quick question. I assume that our insurance is going to be, we're going to get some money back on these. I think reasonable premiums we're paying, but this is what it pays off.
That is definitely. One thing we have to look at the book for one of the vehicles is $9,500, the other is a little over $10,000. We up there have the body guy look at it, we had individuals, not until tomorrow, hopefully, when they look at it. They'll say that if they are told, and then they'll assess and give us. Sometimes they'll be higher than the book value because, again, we have also additional equipment inside and those sort of things that have to be taken out and put back in. So we think it's going to definitely be within that $19,000 we're going to cover with the insurance claim itself.
But for the one vehicle?
That's correct. And we can't go, you know, a little farther. One of the vehicles was actually purchased in March at $12,000. So, again, we have to think it's going to, again, be closer to that number, but right now it looks like the book says it's going to be $10,000, a little bit of change.
Think so, about those used cars we bought.
That is the used car that we bought that was actually damaged.
But we're actually looking, the other one you're not thinking about replacing with the used car.
We're going to, again, the car was the unmarked car that was actually damaged, and it's a V6, which gets better mileage than a V8 Crown Victoria, which we would go ahead and pay $12,000 for that. And again, we'll come back with the warranty. So we're actually getting a couple of things. We're getting a vehicle that we hope to have a life of 7 years that runs.
We don't get 7.
We got 7 years out of the used cars. We actually going to have this car.
That's great. We rack them up.
and again, we'll back up and say, last year we didn't rack one. We flooded one. But we'll go ahead, and it'll be a year that we don't. The individual, and we have to go ahead and talk about the questions. The individual who actually was involved in this incident, he actually wrecked one of our police cars in one of his episodes previously. So what we have to do is make sure he stays in jail, and then hopefully we can go ahead and save a little bit of our vehicles and maybe vehicles from other agencies.
But he needs the vehicles.
He needs the vehicles. Give the chief the vehicles. Keep them up.
And again,
so what you need,
you
need a statement
for
action 19,000.
And it's marked a contingency because we know that, and again, we won't move forward until we go ahead and get the insurance money, you know, statement on that. They said the car's going to be fixed. Then we'll just hold off and we'll wait, or we'll get dumb direction from the council.
Okay. Can we go ahead and
now you're hoping for it to be totaled.
Do you need a motion? Again, we're quite certain it's totaled.
Did you?
And again, if the vehicle's not damaged that much, it could be fixed. We would love it for it to be fixed because there wasn't any problems other than that. We're quite certain.
Did you provide a copy of this for everyone?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I have a purchase order. I'll include it in my report unless you want to just keep it all together and do it now.
That's fine.
Where's your training being held?
The training that we're going to is in Salisbury four things with at Warwick.
Okay.
And us being part of the managed service, we pay roughly $8 per training for 8 hours of training. So again, being a part of, and over half of our guys are instructed at Warwick or at the academy itself, it's one of those in kind. We go ahead and provide instructors at no cost to them. And again, the service itself that it provides in the county is very reasonable.
Thank you. Again, we're very pleased that everybody got serious.
Sure, right. And you caught the bag
up. Yeah. And Mr. Barrett is glad he has his vehicle back.
Yeah.
It's got a little more mileage on it, though. Next is Human Resources Director Jeff Leakwood.
Two things, Mayor, Council, and Chief, that touched on lightly. The department heads have asked to inquire about CPR AED training, and I've done that at a cost. And then the chief came to me and said that Officer Collins was going to be certified. So that saves a lot of money, so it takes her time, and I do appreciate that. So we're going to work that together soon. I had a conversation with Jessica today.
Excellent.
So that happened soon. And then in regards to the two vehicles, in my conversation with Legit, we should have the adjuster here tomorrow.
Excellent. Very good. Well, like I say, whatever happens there, just be in touch with Mary. Mary, you can just send us an email update with what you all know is and the situation is. Since we've already pre-approved the purchase order, so you can just update us by the email. And next is Economic and Community Development Director Michael Day.
The rescheduled bathtub races were a huge success, and I know you probably all heard there was a minor incident that got blown out of proportion by the press, and met with the mayor today, and we're developing some strategic plans for next year to make it safe in case something like that happened. Everybody's fine, and it was a big deal as it was reported. Wednesday, I'm going to be making a presentation at Preservation Maryland's summer conference in Annapolis. Amy Sykes, the director of Neighborhood Revitalization for Department of Housing and Community Development, twisted my arm into doing this. However, she sits on the Community Legacy Grant Review Committee, so I thought it made it best interest that I go and do this.
Yes, that was very wise.
Put myself through this torture. Beach Festival is August 3rd. That'll be before next meeting. And unfortunately, we have one business downtown closing. Whimsical Cottage is closed. This is their last performance, I think, on the 27th. However, I met with the new lessee today, and probably at the next meeting we'll be announcing that they've got a business license and replacing that. So it doesn't even get in the newspaper that it's closing and we've got it granted.
So you're
a lot of activity.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, that's quite a feather in the cap there. Yeah. So. Does anybody have any questions for Michael? All right. Next is the Deputy Town Administrator's report.
I have a total of 14 purchase orders. 13 were on the revised town administrator's report that was on the dais, and the 14th is the addition for the police department. First is PO number 201300.
Make it easy. You could just say the last three.
Okay. Because there are differences between the fiscal years, I don't know if that particularly matters.
Just assume they're all 14
unless
you call them out
of 13. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Then the first three are 2013 purchase orders. 0212 in the amount of $1,983.10 to Worcester County for sledge disposal. 03597 in the amount of $3,426.04 to Hills Electric Motor Service for emergency repair of well number one. And 03539 in the amount of $2,450 to AC Schultes of Delaware for pull, disassemble, and inspection of wastewater pump number two. The remainder of the purchase orders are 2014. 218 in the amount of $1,570.70 to Fairfield in Broadway for hotel reservations for StormCon conference August 18th through 23rd in Myrtle Beach. 0215, the amount of $1,800 to Q's for yearly software enhancement for the camera truck. 0231 for the amount of $2,003.93 to APPA for 2014 annual membership. 0275 in the amount of $24,118.38 to Pep Up Incorporated for number 2 low sulfur diesel fuel for the power plant. 0204 in the amount of $2,095 to West Recreation for engineered wood fiber. 0299 in the amount of $1,500 to State Highway Administration for striping on Flower Street. 0304 in the amount of $14,819 to Terra Firma for patching on Flower Street. 0305 in the amount of $1,200 to Terra Firma for patching in Steve Decatur Park parking lot where a tree was removed. 0209 in the amount of $10,967 to AC Schultes of Delaware for emergency repair of effluent pump, and this was actually approved by email poll vote on July the 10th.
Because it was an emergency.
Yes, it was an emergency purchase. The last is 0328, the amount of $25,994 to Pep Up for number 2 low sulfur diesel fuel for tank S3. And I'm sorry, the last is the police department purchase order for the purchase of a vehicle. As yet, the vendor is undetermined, but this is purchase order 0349 in an amount not to exceed $19,000.
Does anyone have any questions for the Deputy Town Administrator regarding any of the purchase orders reviewed for 3 for fiscal year 13 and the remainder for fiscal year 14?
I make a motion that we approve all 14
yes.
purchase orders.
We have a motion by Councilmember Brittingham to approve all 14 purchase orders as recommended by the Deputy Town Administrator. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Aye. Thank you. And the record shows the purchase orders passing there. I don't have any account comments this evening. If anyone on the council wants to make any comments?
I just want to ask one sidewalk question, so I guess it's Mike. On Main Street, the sidewalk that goes right to Tripoli, when you're coming down Main Street, when you get to Tripoli, there's a perceptible step there. Have we ever considered doing anything about that sidewalk?
I think that when the highway comes through, they're going to have to make an adjustment there. I haven't looked at the plan for that. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because it for handicapped accessible is
not.
It's not.
It's not. Right. If anything they have indicated, just as they did on William Street, is that everything they do on Main Street on both sides will meet the new handicapped accessible things. And anywhere there was a property owner or they had to do anything different, they
it's been that way forever, but it's now, I think, an issue.
Well, I think the street and sidewalks that have at least maintenance in the town are ironically going to change. And if it hadn't been for that street state back in what, the 90s, I think we're going to get more some very severe situations. Who wants to meet all the current standards and will be accessible by wheelchair or one of the power parts or also by...
Just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. I bet this way, somebody would be in big trouble if they could fix that.
Well, I can tell you, the one thing, once Main Street is done, it's kind of... And I think it's been the Main Street, and it's looked terrible for the longest. Once it gets done, it's going to look great.
Thank you. Is that anybody else have any comments? Do you have any comments or questions from anyone in attendance here tonight? Do we have any comments or questions from the press?
Now, stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your attendance and your patience.